Back on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, the return of the Ailish Hour. Had a nice week on the East Coast. Prince Edward Island, a beautiful spot. Got some good golfing, got to golf Crowbush, which was the best course I've ever golfed, hands down. Stunning, stunning views, ocean views. The greens were just impeccable. The course was 10 out of 10. Didn't lose too many balls in the ocean. A few. Set the over-under at 3.5. You can choose. I had a blast. Really enjoyed some time off before the season of every sport colliding into one. It was an absolute blast. Shout out to my friend Jill, who listens to the show from PEI, was giving me some good tips about breweries and spots on the East Coast. Was there for a wedding, which was also just an amazing time. It's good to be back. It's good to be back with the Ailish Hour. I don't even know. Did they do the Ailish Hour all his way? They just did the continuation. Just a 4-hour show. Yeah, must be they were putting the grind in. Now they know what it's like. Football was back yesterday. Got home just in time to sit on my couch and just embrace it all. Absolutely beautiful to hear the sounds of football, filling your heart with joy. We're going to get into all of this with Ty Dunn, my first guest of the hour, but I really was looking forward to last night's major matchup with Tom Brady back in action after retiring, unretiring, starting the first quarterback to ever start a game at 45 years old. I think it's funny how every time he's going to do something, there's going to be a tweet like, Tom Brady is the first 45-year-old to ever throw for 2 touchdowns. Like, yes, we get it. Yet there was still a lot of hype around last night, deservedly so. He looked like pretty much Tom Brady. Retired for 40 days last spring, took that 11-day leave of absence. Still looked like Tom Brady for his 23rd NFL season. He passed for 212 yards, helped the Bucs clown the Cowboys 19-3. He's still undefeated against the Dallas Cowboys, 7-0. Perfect record. He's a Dallas Slayer. But I really enjoyed the pregame hype video. Now, these can sometimes be cheesy. Tom Brady's known for producing a lot of his own hype videos. But I really liked the spin on last night's open to Sunday Night Football. Michael Jordan welcomes Tom Brady back to Sunday Night Football. Here's the awesome clip.
Michael Jordan returned to the game very quietly today with just 2 words. I'm back.
Jordan for the win.
Yeah,
he is back.
Age is just a number.
Tom Brady, the ageless quarterback.
Time is a state of mind.
Tom Brady is out of the game and into the history books.
I was away from the game for almost 2 years. He didn't make 2 months. But you know what that tells me? How much he wants it. How much he needs it. Especially against them Cowboys, who have never beaten him.
We'll see y'all again. Trust me.
As for everyone else, you might worship him. You might hate him. I just hope you appreciate him. Because greatness like this doesn't come along that often. But you know that because you are back too. TB12, season 23.
Let's go!
He's back.
Woo! Loved it, loved it. When two goats collide on the screen, yeah, you got to be watching. I thought it was a pretty... not dominant night for Tom Brady, but he did what he had to do. The Bucs didn't score a touchdown until late in the third quarter, but Mike Evans made that spectacular one-handed catch. It was fine. He threw an ugly interception, but whatever. They found a way to win. Brady still looking confident as ever. Let's ask Ty Dunn about it. National NFL writer and founder at GoLongTD.com. Ty, what's going on?
Good morning. Doing good. Trying to process the wild, wacky week one of football. My God, there's a little bit of everything.
Oh my God, I know. I was prepping for our interview. I'm like, where do I even start? Like, it was just, there's so much fun, so much chaos, and I guess that's what you want after a long off season of nothing. But let's go back to Thursday. Thursday night, I mean, obviously a very important matchup between the Bills and, you know, Super Bowl champs. Looked like the hype really lived up to those Buffalo Bills early on.
No kidding. I mean, I guess this is why everybody's placing bets on the Buffalo Bills at a historic rate to win the Super Bowl. I mean, nobody has thrown more money down on any team. And this is why, because when they're on, they're on, and they cannot be stopped. I mean, it was 31-10, and they turned the ball over a bunch in the first half. I mean, it should have been 55-10. It just, yeah, I think that, and I don't mean this in a bad way, but they're front runners. Like, when they have their foot over your throat, I mean, they don't let up. And they take their cue from their quarterback. Josh Allen has just been this indomitable, unstoppable force when he's really on. And then any problems, any issues they may have, you know, Tre'Davious White's hurt. They're breaking in some rookies at corner. They weren't issues at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's probably what stands out most is it's not like the Rams really took advantage of anything there. And your addition and Von Miller has appeared to change everything on the defensive line. So, yeah, I guess if you're worried about anything, it's just like, how in the hell do you keep this up through the Bills?
Okay, so how in the hell do you keep this up is definitely a question that we have. But is there something that you circled a little bit of a, okay, so they have a couple days here. They got this first game under their belt. They should be addressing some of this throughout the next couple days of practice.
You know, I think I'd probably take it almost more macro than micro because Josh Allen, with that running ability, like, how do you harness that and use it for good? I was a little surprised he ran as much as he did. And it's such a huge part of his game. I mean, that's what woke the offense up from the dead late last season is when they really started calling some quarterback power runs. They kind of gave him the green light to scramble more. And you want that. You don't want to neuter that. But we've seen it. You know, it's hard over the course of a career to play that way and stay healthy. So, I mean, yeah, he's stiff-arming dudes, and it's fun to watch. But yeah, I was just talking to Warren Moon for a piece we had up, and he trained Cam Newton out of college. And he said, look, the Panthers just beat the hell out of this guy. I mean, here's the 2015 MVP dominating in the same kind of fashion we saw Josh Allen dominate those Rams. And all of a sudden, he kind of just fell off a cliff. You know, those injuries add up over time. So if you're going to nitpick, that would probably be it. Like, how do you pick and choose your spots on when to run Josh Allen? I would think the Bills want it in these big games, I guess, and maybe December and January. I would be shocked if they're, like, you know, playing an inferior opponent if they're calling any QB runs.
Mm-hmm. So Bills, obviously, a lot of praise around them, but the Rams really were disappointing. A lot of blame to go around on that side for sure. Stafford was sacked 6 times. The O-line is looking like maybe a question mark. What were some of the reasons, in your opinion, why they were just unable to really challenge?
You know, you wonder about that elbow. Mm-hmm. You know, there's always a little bit of fire where there's smoke, and they're saying the right things and that he's healthy. But, yeah, I mean, that didn't look good. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's weird, though. I wonder with Stafford. It's just crazy how this game, it's such a game of inches and milliseconds and specks of time where, I mean, if Jaquiski Tartt, if he catches that interception in the NFC Championship game, we're all talking about Matthew Stafford in a totally different way than we have been the last 6-7 months. And what we saw was the Matt Stafford of the Lions years in that first game. It was just errant passes, high, low, just all over the place. And, you know, he was athletic for a while in his career, but he is getting up there, so it's a little tougher to move from that rush. I don't know. I don't think it's time to, like, you know, everybody lose their minds and write the Rams off because they didn't win a game in the month of November last year, and they figured it out. And Sean McVay's a smart guy. I think they'll figure this out. You know, throwing the ball to Allen Robinson more than once is probably a good place to start. But I don't think Stafford's in that upper echelon. He won a Super Bowl. He had the game-winning drive. You can't take that away from him. But I think that maybe we have this inflated opinion of what he really is going into this season.
Okay, so one of the best parts about week one is overreactions because everybody, that's the only thing you have to consume is everything that's happened this past weekend. So I want to see if you have a couple of yourself, but one of the ones that stuck out for that first game was that Bengals-Steelers mess. It was actually quite enjoying to watch, but I mean, to kickers, bad day for kickers in general. But just seeing the rough start that Joe Burrow had, obviously not inspiring much confidence. Is there a level of concern for you there, especially with the lack of support or coverage that he had?
You know, I think the Bengals are going to be fine. It just seems like a freak half. And, you know, you're talking to somebody who loves the Cincinnati Bengals this year. So, you know, get that out of the way.
That's good.
I think they're built to win when it matters later in the season. But, yeah, I mean, I think the fact that they were in this game and should have won this game, if not for a, you know, a shanked field goal, says a lot about Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase, that everything was going wrong. He had the four interceptions, mm-hmm. I think another fumble. I mean, they could not hang on to the ball at all. Yet you recover. You do what you did last year. I mean, Ja'Marr Chase went for $129 and a touchdown. Joe Burrow, you look up and, you know, he's throwing for 338. So they were able to figure things out. It just, you know, the turnovers will kill you. And he doesn't strike me as a guy that's going to be plagued by turnovers, you know, over the course of a 17-game season. He's too smart. He decodes defenses at a veteran's rate. I mean, this is somebody well beyond his years. So I'm not worried about Burrow. I'm not worried about the Bengals. This is just one of those games where when it comes to playoff seeding, they might look back and, you know, wonder what could have been.
Okay. Okay, I like it. Don't sound the alarms yet. A little bit of confidence on your side. Okay, so how about the way that Aaron Rodgers looked in terms of frustration, not having the number one wide receiver that he needs? It looked like he, I don't know, maybe it was just because the cameras loved to show him, but it seemed like there was a little bit of frustration brewing on the sidelines.
Yeah, it's funny you bring that up. I'm actually writing on this topic now as we speak.
It's like I knew.
Go Along. So yeah, if you want to check it out, goalongtd.com
sure.
will be up soon. But yeah, I mean, this is, to me, this is different than 38-3 against the Saints week one last year, because that was listless, that was apathetic, that was, you know, the first game back from missing all offseason, you know, dragging the front office out to the public square to be flogged by the media all offseason. It was weird, but because he had Davante Adams. I mean, they were able to kind of snap their fingers and do what they've always done after that loss. There's no snapping of the fingers after this game. I mean, they really have to look in the mirror and take a look at themselves, you know, starting with the quarterback. What is your identity? It can't be patting the ball and waiting for a play to develop, because you're throwing a Juwan Winfrey, Christian Watson, Romeo Doubs. I mean, this is a totally different offense. You've got to lean into the ground game, win a different type of game, win a 17-13 game. I mean, it's absurd that Aaron Jones touched the ball 8 times and didn't get his 4th carry of the game until the middle of the 3rd quarter. I mean, he's your best weapon on offense, and you're not even using him. So it's on Rodgers. It's on the floor. It's on everybody. And until they're willing to make a change, this is going to be the norm.
Mm-hmm. Is that something that you can really expect to change that dramatically in season? Like, just the first outlook of it was, okay, this is messy. But is there a potential that you can actually, you know, work on that enough and give that trust to players and have Aaron Rodgers make those type of changes in time for this to be not something that you really look back on as a disaster?
I think they'll figure it out. I mean, getting healthier will help. Bakhtiari, Jenkins, Lazard, they were without a ton of players. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's going to help. And we've seen them figure things out over the course of the season. Granted, he had better players around him. And I think Aaron Rodgers is a smart guy. He's going to know, like, he just can't operate like he's always operated at the line of scrimmage. And we all saw the frustration on the sideline. My God, I mean, he was losing his mind. So obviously he can't get guys on his plane, but that should be expected when you don't have Davante Adams. So, yeah, are they going to be a Super Bowl contender? That's going to take time. But right now they just have to really start from square one and play a different type of game.
All right, lots of injuries as well yesterday. It was kind of a tough one for some of the stars. TJ Watt would be a massive, massive loss. But just a couple minutes ago, we saw that Dak Prescott's going to be out for 8 to 10 weeks. I think that a lot of conclusions were drawn that the Cowboys are done. Is that an overreaction?
That is not an overreaction in my book. I mean, it's really a roster with issues all over the place. I mean, beyond Micah Parsons, who scares you? What do you have on defense? And offensively, I mean, Jerry Jones's gaffes are just, you know, popping up like warts everywhere you look. I mean, they got rid of Amari Cooper after giving him that huge deal, which, okay, you're able to unload him for some, whatever it was, a mid-round pick. But then you never really replaced him. I mean, James Washington gets hurt. Dak Prescott is really talented, obviously. Now, obviously, he's now hurt too. But he just what does he have around him beyond CeeDee Lamb? I get it. Jerry Jones wants Zeke Elliott to be the focal point. He said that several times. But when's the last time the owner, you know, sticking his nose into things panned out? I mean, Tony Pollard might be the best back on the roster. Zeke's getting up there in age. And, by the way, he's on an albatross of a contract. It's going to get worse before it gets better. It just is. That's how it goes in Dallas. And obviously now without Dak Prescott. I mean, look at Mike McCarthy's teams in Green Bay. When Aaron Rodgers went down, the team went right down with him. We saw it in Dallas 2 years ago. So, yeah, they'll probably finish in last place.
Oh, great. I mean, you're not. I don't think that you're saying anything that nobody was thinking. It's a tough thing to wake up to this morning as Cowboys fans. One thing that we pondered throughout the show this morning was that Patrick Mahomes, I think that we didn't give him enough credit this offseason. We didn't talk about him enough. I mean, it was the Josh Allen show, understandably. I think we sometimes forget that there's other players that can really challenge for that. He had 5 touchdowns yesterday. Did we maybe quietly forget about how good Patrick Mahomes can be?
No doubt about it. I mean, I think he is an insanely competitive dude too. He doesn't really say much, but you know, I've talked to people who know him over the course of the last 2 years. And I mean, it doesn't matter if he's throwing, you know, hatchets at those hatchet and hot places or playing golf or, you know, on the basketball court
TikToking.
Or anything. maybe he draws the line at TikTok. And I don't know if he's going with Jack.
I hope not.
He is. He's ridiculously competitive. And he absolutely heard what everybody has been saying all offseason long, right? It's been all about Josh Allen in the AFC. He loses Tyreek Hill. Tyreek Hill is, you know, taking shots upon shots. He's just catching these strays in these podcasts. Mahomes, that is. He's not going to say anything at the mic, but you better believe behind the scenes he's stewing and he wants to stick it to people. Let alone the fact that he lost the Super Bowl 2 years ago. He lost a brutal AFC Championship last year when he played terribly in the second half. Yeah, he might just be going scorched earth on the NFL. And it's not always a bad thing when you lose your top receiver historically. I mean, you could take it all the way back to Brett Favre losing Sterling Sharp. You know, all of a sudden he's got to be more disciplined and disperse the ball to different players. You're not as locked in. It's a weird way to think, but maybe he's even a better quarterback without Tyreek Hill.
Oh, that's a bit scary. I saw that a lot of people were saying that Travis Kelce might be the reason that we forget about Tyreek Hill. You know, he can still get open without him on the outside or in the slot to complement him. Did you feel that was an easy Band-Aid, at least, or an eraser of the lack of Tyreek Hill?
Yeah, I mean, if Kelsey's healthy, he does have that second reaction rapport with Mahomes that Rodgers had with Devontae Adams for so long, where play breaks down and it becomes this game of basketball and you're just trying to find a spot. You're operating off of feel. I mean, he still has that with Travis Kelce. And I don't think the guys at wide receiver are bums. I mean, Marquez Valdes-Scantling, Juju Smith-Schuster, Mecole Hardman. I mean, these are some players that will burn you, MVS and Hardman especially. And Juju's the proven receiver. I mean, beyond the TikToks and the nonsense, he's tough. He is a tough, tough receiver. I think that this is a loaded offense still.
I love that the TikTok slander is high on this show at this moment. It's funny. Okay, so let's look ahead to tonight. Big primetime showdown, Monday Night Football. Russell Wilson makes his Broncos debut against his former team. We thought about this with Ross Tucker this morning, and Haley and I have maybe differing opinions on who has the upper hand. Is it Russell Wilson coming in knowing the opponents, or is it, you know, that team and the coaching staff knowing Russell Wilson?
Ooh, that's a really good question. Because we're inclined to say Russell Wilson because he's, you know, one of the best quarterbacks in the game. But, I mean, Pete Carroll's a defensive coach. He knows his tendencies. I'm sure there's going to be something defensively they can throw at him, knowing his weak spots, right, his blind spots. And we saw with Bill Belichick facing Tom Brady last year. I get it, Brady and the Bucs won, but Brady made him think hard, play to play. So maybe things do come a little bit more difficult to Russell Wilson. But I'd still say Russell Wilson, because I think him and Nate Hackett, this is just a perfect, perfect marriage. I mean, these are two guys. Say what you want about Russell with, you know, the practicing the high fives and waltzing the practice in his own jersey. I mean, he's different bird. But I don't know many people in the sport who are obsessed with the sport as much as Russell Wilson. Mm-hmm. He is an insane worker. I think that he is going to relish this next phase of his career. And Nathaniel Hackett is an unbelievably bright coach who's always on the cutting edge of schemes. I think that they're meant to be. I can't imagine how many hours they've been pouring into this thing together. I'm sure they didn't really need to put any homework clauses into his contract, given how Russell Wilson works. I like Denver a lot. I think they were one of those teams we are kind of sleeping on. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they're going to challenge. I think Kansas City still wins the West, but I think that Denver, because of that defense was really good last year, and they've got a better receiving core than people think. Cortland Sutton, he could erupt this season with Russell Wilson. He seems like the perfect receiver for Russell Wilson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought about him as a good, you know, betting opportunity today. I think that we'll be looking for them to mesh well together. What about Geno Smith on the other side? Ross Tucker was like, there's no way that this, like, what are they doing with this quarterback? Do you feel that he's, you know, serviceable enough to give the Seahawks a chance, or is this like just a big question mark for you as well?
It doesn't make much sense. I get, you know, you've got a coach that I would think wants to win right now. Mm-hmm. Correct? Like, he's old. he's knocked at the door. That's why they kind of had their kumbaya moment with Russell Wilson a year ago. I think that John Schneider was ready to move on a year earlier. And Carroll was like, no, I'm old. I want to win it right now. I don't want to be the guy that traded Russell Wilson. And he's still here. Carroll, that is. I mean, he's still around. So why are you starting a quarterback that, I mean, the perception is you want to lose this year to try to start over next year. I get it. You know, Pete Carroll's sprinting up and down the sideline. Maybe he's got that fountain of youth and he's coaching another decade, but it doesn't make any sense. I really don't understand it, because we know what Geno Smith is. Mm-hmm. He's Geno Smith. He's not very good. And so Seattle's not going to be very good.
Oh boy. I know one of my co-hosts, JD, was a big Seattle fan. He's having a tough go with the look of this team this year. One of my favorite things from yesterday's games, was going for the 2-point conversion, Brian Daboll, with the like ballsy move, really, to just do that in your first ever game as a head coach with the aggressive approach. Did you like some of the showings of the new coaches, what they did yesterday in week one?
Absolutely. I mean, Brian Daboll and Joe Shane, I mean, they're going to have to rework that roster, obviously. I mean, Daniel Jones was Daniel Jones. You know, he did the sort of things we've seen. But they won on the road against the team that was number one seed in the AFC last year. That's coaching. I mean, that's getting guys to believe and fight. And, yeah, they won on the missed kick. And you can
it was
talk
fun.
Circles around this game. But it was fun, right. Mm-hmm. And they went for it. And I think that shows your players, you believe in your players. Mm-hmm. And that's something that is going to last. I mean, that's definitely just a belief that you want everybody to have in each other in a locker room. And living here in Buffalo, I can't stress enough how much these players love Brian Daboll. It was hard for them to lose Brian Daboll, and I think he'll succeed in New York. It might take a little time because they got to find the quarterback, but they're going to win eventually.
And Saquon Barkley looked pretty good. You feel like he's going to be—he's going to be back to his level of play.
Yeah, I mean, man, it just lo and behold, right? You don't have this sieve of an offensive line and insipid play calling and Joe Judge. And I mean, you change a few things around him and we're starting to see that back we all saw at Penn State. So yeah, that's talk about storylines we didn't really talk about enough leading up to this season and possibilities. Saquon Barkley being everything we thought Saquon Barkley would be should have been at the top of the list.
Yeah, it's great to see. Like, you know, you want the best for him. He's dealt with some unfortunate stuff, but good to see him get in there day one. Okay, last one for me. Lamar Jackson turns down what we kind of find out is this big, massive 6-year extension worth $290 million. He's betting on himself going forward this year. Do you think that that is the right call for him?
Oh, my goodness. I wish we had an hour to discuss this because, I'm very pro player, and I get it. Deshaun Watson gets this insane contract from the Browns. You know, Lamar can't control who gives out these insane contracts. So, he made that. I deserve that and then some because I'm Lamar Jackson. I get it. But if you bet on yourself for a year – and you know they're going to slap the franchise tag on you the year after that. That's two more years playing the way you play. Is this going to affect his market value? It could, because teams are going to view Lamar Jackson as quarterback / running back. That's not a slight. It's what makes him so special. You just wonder, is he going to be doing like what Tom Brady does at 45, Aaron Rodgers does at 39? I don't know. I mean, can you really run around like he does and play the way he does late in your career? I think it'll be harder to get a long-term deal 2 years down the line for Lamar Jackson. And like I said, that's coming from somebody who, these guys got to get every penny they deserve. But I think this is coming with an element of risk that Lamar Jackson, that's where an agent could probably help a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it'd be such an interesting storyline to follow this season. You know, you want it to be a successful one for him because that payday is waiting at the end. But you're right, a bit of a risk. No doubt about it. Ty, thanks for joining this morning. We'll get you back out after another week of fun football, and we'll discuss and hopefully have some more fun chaos on the show. Thanks.
Fantastic. Hey, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
No problem. Ty Dunn, national NFL writer and founder at GoLongTD.com. Check that out. He said he was just about to write an article on Aaron Rodgers. Pretty good timing to bring that up. Seemed a bit full of tension, to say the least. Expectations might have to shuffle. That's GoLongTD.com. We had some news happened during the switchover from the Hayley Eilish show to the Eilish Hour. Nick Suzuki was named captain of the Montreal Canadiens today. Martin St. Louis made the announcement this morning. They're having their team's annual golf tournament. Nick Suzuki, 23 years old, becomes the youngest captain in team history. Obviously, Shea Weber was the previous team captain, was traded away to the Golden Knights in June. And Joel Edmondson and Brendan Gallagher will serve as the alternative captains. Pretty big role for a young guy. I know that he is an incredible competitor. He's spoken quite highly of by his teammates. He's the heartbeat of this team, Gallagher said when they're talking about it at the golf tournament. You know, he made the all-rookie team in his season debut with the Canadiens. He's really established himself as, you know, Montreal's top center, 149 points in 203 career games. He just got this 8-year, $63 million extension. It's kicking in this season. It's great. I really like the kid. I think he's a supreme athlete, leader, hard worker. I think this will only give him a bigger impact. Expectations are certainly high, and I think he can do it. There's still 6 teams without captains this season. So Sabres don't have one, the Ducks, the Coyotes, the Flyers, the Kraken, and the Calgary Flames. I wonder if the Kraken would name Shane Wright their captain. I think it would be a very interesting move. He's going to be the face of your franchise, but he's only 18 years old. Do they wait for him to get a couple more years under his belt and do a potential hybrid situation? Still 6 teams with that one. But Nick Suzuki getting that prestigious honor for the Montreal Canadiens. Good for him. Hockey just around the corner. Looking forward to getting back into that preseason just around the corner as well. As I mentioned, Jays have a massive homestand ahead, kicking off tonight against the Tampa Bay Rays, who are half a game up on them for that wild card spot and home field advantage, which is going to be so vital down the stretch here. Plus a doubleheader tomorrow, a rare doubleheader at the Rogers Center and Looney Dogs. So a very, very special doubleheader. I'm going to be certainly crushing that Looney Dogs number, followed by Wednesday and Thursday games, a little getaway game on Thursday afternoon. And then the Baltimore Orioles back in town. Just importance, consistency, starting pitching, really lining up perfectly for this start of the homestand. Ricky Romero is going to join me next, former MLB pitcher. Talk about, yes, a bullpen day, which was unfortunate, but is it worth it? Because they're lining it up for Barrios, Manoah, Gausman, all of them for the big games that matter. Ricky's next on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Back on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. It's hour four, the Ailish Hour. Take a look at the podcast, subscribe, download. This week, Haley Salvian was filling in. A lot of NFL discourse. The Jays back in action. We got Ross Tucker back, our weekly guest. Stuff's happening. Sports are back. It's a good feeling. The Blue Jays looking to continue a pretty good stretch there, 8-2. I mean, yesterday with a bullpen day, which always brings up some unsettling feelings about the trade deadline. We don't need to get into that yet, but moving forward, they got the Rays tonight, Baltimore on the weekend, some very big, important wild card potential games. Our insider brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit donvalleynorthlexus.com. It's Ricky Romero, former MLB pitcher and current Sportsnet analyst. Hey, Ricky, how's it going?
I'm doing great, Ailish. How are you doing?
I'm good. It's good. We're back in action. I know last time I talked to you, you were about to do your fantasy football draft. How did that go?
Well, my fantasy football is doing really, really well this week.
Yeah.
I mean, my first two picks were running backs and Joe Mixon and Saquon Barkley. Yeah. So that went really, really well. But my real team struggled yesterday in Chicago, and it wasn't a very good showing for Trey Lance and the 49ers, but I feel like they'll rebound back.
You don't think they should hit the panic button on Trey Lance yet, no?
No, absolutely not. I mean, tough conditions to play in, and that's no excuse. I'm sure him being the athlete that he is wouldn't use it as an excuse, but it's just, it's a game one. It's a long season, and we'll just see where it goes moving forward. But I'm pretty confident in him still, and the weapons are there. And obviously, George Kittle missing the game is pretty big. But I have faith in the 49ers, and you know, nothing makes me happier. Even though they lost, nothing makes me happier than seeing the Dallas Cowboys lose and the Las Vegas Raiders lose. So let's just put that out there. So if they lose, it makes I'm pretty happy.
Was there a little bit of a smile on your face when you saw that? Not a smile, but a little bit of a when you saw Dak Prescott is also injured for the next 6 to 8 weeks and the Cowboys are basically just hopeless.
I like to see them healthy, and obviously that stinks for Dak Prescott because he's a pretty good quarterback, but it stinks that he's going to be out 6 to 8 weeks. But even with him, I mean, even if with him, when they lose, it just that rivalry will never go away from those 49er Cowboys games from back in the day. And it's just my hatred for them and the Raiders. And it's just it's always going to be there no matter what. And you know, the Seahawks and the Rams are starting to creep into how much I hate them, but. It's always been the Cowboys and the Raiders for me. Maybe it's just because Southern California Raiders, a lot of people here are Raiders fans, and they think, you know, their team's always going to win the Super Bowl, and they never do. So,
well, it's good to have that competitive competitive cities that you live in. Like, we just kind of don't have it up here, obviously, because there's no Canadian teams. But we have, like, the Bills right over the border, and a lot of people are like, legend fans. If their parents were Cowboys fans, they're Cowboys fans, or they've been sticking with the team for a long time. But you live right in the area where there's just so much NFL discourse. I'm a little bit jealous. But let's talk about some Jays. I know this week is going to be a pretty massive one. Just your level of confidence with the way that they had that really great 8-2 stretch. I know yesterday's bullpen game, a bit of a sour ending to how that went, but feeling like things are lining up well for the Rays and the Orioles.
Yeah, no, it was a very successful trip, and it could have got, I mean, obviously, if you go 10-0, it's perfect, obviously, but 8-2 is tremendous, and to be able to go to Pittsburgh and take care of business there, and then you go to Baltimore and take the series there, which was a huge series, and then you carry it on into the Texas series and win the series there. And right now, it's about winning series, and they did just that, and when you have the starting pitching, those are the, I've been saying it all along, those are the guys that are going to set the tone for this team, and they're going to go as far as this team, as far as this team goes, it's going to be all up to their starting pitching. And obviously, going back to the Pittsburgh series, it was Manoa who started that series and set up the great tempo, and it kind of carried over into the Baltimore series. And then in Texas, obviously, Ross Stripling, I mean, the unsung hero, continues his great story. A guy that wasn't even supposed to be in the rotation, and he's doing tremendous work there. And he's putting himself in one of those situations where you have to wonder in a three-game series if he'd be the third starter right now. Obviously, Jose Berrios has been pitching pretty well as of late too, but you almost have to start wondering what the thought process is going to be there. And obviously, you know, you can't say enough of about Manoa and Gausman and what they've been able to do. So they're starting pitching, and obviously their offense has been doing well. And yes, like I said, yesterday is one of those games where, hey, you lose the game, you still had some opportunities to win the game. It didn't happen, but offensively they did a great job. And obviously Bo Bichette, we've all seen what he's been able to do this like past like 2 weeks. I mean, he's on another level. And So it's some good things happening, especially coming into this series. That's going to be huge. I mean, this is going to determine a lot of their season right here with five games against the Rays. I mean, when was the last time you saw a series go five or have a series be five games in 4 days? I mean, I don't think I've ever seen that. And then obviously you got the Baltimore Orioles coming in as well. But yeah, it's good. This week can determine a lot for the Toronto Blue Jays.
No, I'm looking forward to a rare doubleheader at the Rogers Centre. I think that'll be fun, but it definitely puts a lot of pressure on trying to get a big series win. And I know that they did adjust the starting pitching rotation to be able to have that bullpen day to allow for Berrios to get tonight's start. Is that as significant of a shift? Obviously, you would know from the outside. It's like, oh, you're really like you're messing with the strategy and the rest, or is it just it's only a positive for you to get another day of rest?
Oh, it's huge positive, especially this late in the season. You've established a routine. You know what to do, and if they give you an extra day, like they did Jose Berrios to him, he's like, okay, like I get an extra day to kind of rest and just kind of go over what the game plan is. I mean, obviously, you never wanted to look past the Texas Rangers, but once you won that series, you're like, okay, I can move things a little bit. Obviously, I'd rather have one of my best pitchers go against the Tampa Bay Rays, who are leading the wild card right now. And if anything, I think it helps him. I know sometimes we, as starting pitchers, want to stay in our routine, and I remember, you know, Doc Halliday, if there was a day off, he didn't want the extra day. So you just had to move the rest of the rotation back, but he would stay on 5 days. So you just didn't say much there. But that's just the way it was. But I think this late in the season, obviously it definitely helps. It'll help a guy like Jose Berrios. And again, it's a huge, huge series. And I mean, and if you want to line up your best guys against the Tampa Bay Rays, and the Tampa Bay Rays are not a team that wow you know, on paper, and they don't have like a big superstar or anything like that, but they go out there and win ball games, and that's what's made them successful for so many years, and they can pitch. And so it's gonna you're gonna see some good pitching duels, and I can't wait. I mean, it's a great series. It's exciting, and you know, if I'm a fan, I mean, I'm showing up to that stadium ready to root on these guys because they did have a successful trip, and they put themselves in that situation to be in the playoffs, so they deserve, you know, all the cheering and stuff like that from fans. So hopefully the fans show up and are loud for these guys.
I mean, certainly September baseball has just that added importance, and it's so much fun to have something on the line. And the Blue Jays being able to control kind of their destiny here with this big week ahead, being able to get some ground in the wild card race, maybe some home field advantage. It's just it's going to be really, really fun to head down there specifically. I know you mentioned Bo and his incredible week or month, or it feels like it's just been the hottest player in baseball. What are you seeing from him? Is it a level of confidence that just kind of like helps him build? And I know he's a guy that is a bit tough on himself at times and very competitive. Are you just seeing a more comfortable Bo Bichette?
Yeah, no, I think he's just being more selective. And you watch the way he takes at bats, the way he takes pitches. It just seems like he's a guy that's very confident and seeing the ball really, really well. And those are the guys that, when you're coming into a series and you're the opposing pitcher, you're like, whoa, this guy is spitting on every good pitch that I'm throwing. So you just got to, you know, thread carefully with him if you're going up against him. But, I mean, that's a good feeling to have. And, mm-hmm. and talking to hitters who have gone through those stretches where they're going really, really well, they tell you, they're like, yeah, man. I never experienced that, obviously, because I wasn't a hitter. But I'd always tell the guys, I'm like, what is it that you guys see when you guys are going on a great roll? And they're like, dude, honestly, the ball looks like a beach ball. It looks like you see the laces, you see everything in slow motion. And I'm like, wow, that's pretty crazy, you know, because the balls are still coming in pretty hard. And just like I said, it's the approach and him staying within his plan and not trying to do too much. And I think everything's just coming to him. And he's a guy, obviously, that gets criticized a lot. But, man, like the guy goes out there and plays every day. He grinds it out, and he, you know, he's been playing some good shortstop, and obviously at the plate, like I said, it's almost like he stuck to his plan, and he knew it was this day was coming, and it couldn't have come at a better time for the Toronto Blue Jays, and hopefully he's able to carry it into the series, into this week, and just towards the last part of this season, and hopefully into the playoffs.
Can opposing pitchers maybe overcompensate when they know a player's against them? And Bo Bichette's been, as I said, one of the hottest players in baseball, and you don't want to allow for him to continue that run. Can it get in the opposing pitcher's head a bit, or are you just approaching every pitch like it's the same type of player?
I mean, if it was me, I'd approach it as just, mm-hmm. I'm going to throw my best stuff at you, and if you beat me, you beat me, and if you don't, then I got you. And
that's not everybody's
just kind of the
Ricky.
Way it is. No, but, you know, they're going to face a Tampa Bay Rays team that I feel like they're going to challenge him. I mean, those guys, like I said, they can pitch. They've always pitched. Mm-hmm. They always bring up arms that can go out there and pitch really, really well. And I feel like Tampa Bay Rays are that type of team that are going to challenge him and not be afraid of him. Obviously, you go into the game saying, okay, we're not going to let this guy beat us. He's super hot. Okay, where are his hot spots? Where are his cold spots? And you kind of go off of that. But you know that if you miss and he's this hot, he's going to make you pay.
So yesterday, Blue Jays were 0-10 with runners in scoring position. They've had some of these streaks before where they just can't manage to get a hit. Is there something that you see that they could maybe be a little bit different or change an approach just to be a bit more effective in those situations?
Well, watching some of the game, Martin Perez was tough on them, and he was dotting that fastball down and away, and he was getting it, and he kept putting it there down and away, and it seemed to frustrate the Jays hitters a little bit. But I think at the end of the day, I mean, yeah, you see an 0-10 with runners in scoring position, and it's just one of those things where you just move on to the next game, and I don't think the approach has to change. I think, obviously, those guys know that they have to be better, and I think sometimes with two strikes, maybe be a little bit better, maybe make a little bit more contact instead of trying to maybe hit a 3-run home run or a 2-run home run or something like that. And again, I wouldn't put too much thought into it. Like I said, it's one game. And obviously you mentioned that we've seen stretches like this, but sometimes it's just baseball. And because they were plenty good enough two nights ago when they put up 11 runs. early. And and again, I think that the Tampa Bay Rays are going to come in and pitch, and every run is going to be important. So that them being able to manufacture a run is going to be really, really key for this series.
Okay, last one before I let you go. MLB is going to move forward with pitch clock. They're on band shifts and have bigger bases. First, obviously, with the pitch clock. Is that something that you love or are tentative about?
Oh, I spent a lot of time talking about this on MLB Network Radio yesterday. I haven't came around it yet. I don't like it. Again, I think the game of baseball doesn't have a clock for a reason, right? I mean, it's one of those things where you go out there and you enjoy a ball game. And yes, you want to speed it up. Yes, we want fans to enjoy the game. But at the same time, there's a lot of strategy that comes with pitching in certain situations. I'm not saying you should take, 20 seconds every pitch, but there's certain situations that dictate that, whether it's a hot day, whether you have a Shohei Ohtani at the plate, late in the game, and you got to think about a 2-2 pitch and stuff like that. There's certain situations that you don't want to be rushed. And with this pitch clock, obviously it's going to rush you. And talking to different guys are like, yeah, you feel a little bit rushed, but then you see the bright side of it. And obviously, it's been tried in the minor leagues and it's cut down games by half an hour and stuff like that. So, I mean, we'll see. I think I feel like I got to see it on TV and see how it goes and see how, a lot of these guys in the big leagues have been doing the same routine for many, many years. Mm-hmm. And obviously their routines are going to change a little bit and they're going to have to train differently this off season. So I'm curious to see how it all works out. Obviously you have to adapt to it because this is going to be the new thing. And we'll see what happens from there. Obviously hitters too have a job to get to the box and all that stuff. And you're not allowed to pick off more than twice. And it's just, to me, it's a little bit like, what are we doing to this game? Like I said, once I see it, maybe I'll come around. But right now, I don't really like the pitch clock that much.
I think you sold me well on your argument. I was more like, hey, it'd be fun for fans to not have to sit on their couch for 4 hours. But if you're at the ballpark, it's kind of nice. You get more time to enjoy, have loony dogs, have a couple beers. So I see it both ways. And as a pitcher,
exactly.
I get it. Ricky, appreciate you joining this morning. Going to be a fun week of baseball ahead. And we'll catch up with you next week.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ricky. Ricky Romero, former MLB pitcher and current Sportsnet analyst, and our insider. It's brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Jays and Rays tonight, 7 p.m. start. You got Broncos and Seahawks at 8. Berríos on the mound against a pitcher that was TBD until just about now. A name you may not know, Cooper Criswell. Not a lot about him on the internet, so could be a fun game for Blue Jays fans. They're favored heavily on the money line, looking to start this important series with a massive win. You got the doubleheader tomorrow. Looney Dogs. It's going to be a big day in the city, a big week ahead. Appreciate you listening to the Ailish Hour and the Fan Morning Show. Happy to be back. We'll be back tomorrow morning, Haley and myself, and we'll catch you then. Thanks.